Blog Talk Radio.
What up?
It's that time again, another episode of Sports Card Live. We take a magnifying glass to the sports card industry. News, reviews, thoughts, the occasional tangents, and free stuff. Hosted by Dan Rage, Ryan, and Doug Fresh. Boom!
Rippers and Sports Nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. It's been a couple weeks. We're going to talk everything 2014 National. I lived vicariously through Ryan and Dan and some other people that were there as well, just following on Twitter. Because for those of you that don't know out there, my baby's due any day now. In fact, I might even get called during the show. Who knows? So I didn't make the trip to Cleveland just because it was too risky, because you never know. So, you know, that's why that didn't happen. I'm excited to bring a little bundle of joy in my life, so looking forward to that. But we're going to talk some sports cards today. We're going to have Dan and Ryan here give us their take on the National, what happened at the National, all the new announcements and things that the companies did and what they thought. We're also going to review Prime Hockey and Platinum that released last week. And if we have some time, we'll preview some of the new stuff that's coming out this week. Start with Ryan. What's going on, man? How's it feel to be back in town?
Feels good to be back in town, actually. Definitely feels good, and very tired. Even like a three-hour time difference just destroys me. But it was a lot of fun going out there, but definitely good to be back in California.
Dan, how does it feel to be back in California as well?
Feels good. It's home. I thought Ryan was in Vegas.
I was, yes. It was a little quick little slide through Vegas, you know, check out some of the nightlife, and then get out of there before I spend too much money and stuff. So,
yeah.
He had to place that long money on the Bengals to win the World Series for this year.
World Series?
Yeah. Or, I mean, the Super Bowl. Did I say World Series?
Same difference. Neither one's going to happen. So, I mean, same difference. Same bet.
Man, I am shaking off the rust. Holy crap. I didn't even catch that, dude. I usually catch myself in the middle of something like that. Jesus Christ. Wow. Anyways. So let's just start right into the National. I think most of this show is going to be about the National and, you know, our take on things, you know, the Panini NFL announcements, which we'll talk about and give you opinions on that. And talk about the company's promotions, like what their presence was, you know, what people were getting there from the National. So I'm kind of going to lead this. Since I wasn't there, I'm going to kind of lead you guys into some of these questions. First off, what did you guys – I'll start with Dan. What do you think the age demographic was at the 2014 National in Cleveland this year?
Okay. I like that question. So I would say 90% is probably, let's say, 30 to 65, maybe.
That's a pretty broad range. That's like saying, people there are between 1 and 100.
No. But, like, I mean, that's basically, I would say majority. Okay, well, I'll break it down for you. I was trying to make it easy on myself. Okay, so let's see, 50%, let's say 50 years old to 65, is that notching it down a little bit for you? Is that giving you more of an idea?
Perfect.
30% is probably between 30 and 40, and above 65 is probably about 10%, and below 30 is probably like 10%.
Gotcha. Ryan,
did that equal 100%?
I didn't pull out my calculator. That was tough math for me. I didn't pull it out on that one, but I'm gonna say yes.
It was pretty close.
Ryan, you agree or are more leaning towards the older demographic?
Yeah, I mean, there's middle-aged guys, there's guys our age, but yeah, it is that kind of older demographic. The one thing I would point out is that, like, when I was a kid, there were kids there. I mean, it was a very, very small percentage. I think I even joked one day they were doing like a free kids group break, and I was like, well, I don't – are there 30 kids here? You know what I mean? So I think I think that when I was a kid, I was dragging my dad to the card show. My dad didn't collect cards. He collected when he was a little kid, and he put them on his bike spokes. But I would drag my dad to the card show because cards were hot when we were younger. Whereas now, the kids here, I probably think it's the dad, not dragging the kids, but it's the dads influencing the kids to come to the card show. So it's even the kids here, it's for a different motivation than it was, say, even just 20 years ago or so. So while there is young kids here, I'm pretty bearish on the future, the 20-year, 30-year window of sports cards collectibles, to be honest. The biggest thing to keep in mind is there are some absolute stone-cold whales that come through with literally a six-figure bankroll and drop it on these vintage cards. I met a dealer who said he sold out his entire table for the first time in 20 years. Wow. And while he wouldn't tell me how much he sold all his cards for, I just from talking to the guy on a four-hour flight, it sounded like this guy got $50,000, $60,000 for his entire table. I also met a whale who I can't really – I'll just say this. This guy used to own a professional sports team, so a pretty popular professional sports team. So obviously this guy's got big money. There was a guy on Sunday.
And just to clarify, a whale does not speak to their weight. It means whale means their wallet. Just for those out there that don't know what a whale means.
Right.
Yes.
it's a term in a lot of businesses, but back in the card store day, like I could name all the Jorge, the whale. Every time Jorge, when I worked at a card shop, I was a little kid. I was like in middle school, high school. Whenever Jorge the whale would come into the card shop, I had to run to the back. So you know there was some shaky deals going on in the card shop I worked at. But every time Jorge the whale came in, it was, oh, Brian, could you go in the back and sort this 1986 top set? But so I'm getting a ride back to the airport or going to the airport from Cleveland, and I meet a guy, start talking to him, and this guy's a whale. It wasn't the NBA owner, but this guy's a straight whale. And this guy's like, I only got $53,000 left. So you can imagine if 53 G's was the rest of his budget, imagine how much he spent. I mean, yeah, these guys aren't tweeting. These guys aren't fucking walking around These guys aren't taking they aren't taking videos. They aren't tweeting. They aren't doing, writing blogs and going on podcasts and stuff. These guys are literally straight ballers, older, obviously. Retired, balling, they wait all year to come to the National. They have little private forums. They rent out the best suites in all the Cleveland hotels. Like I was talking to one guy, and they had rented out a freaking spread that was like five bedrooms, and he said, "Oh yeah, we had room probably for another five guys." And all those guys, it's kind of like a old boys club. You go to the country club, and you're like, who can spend the most? Who can rip the biggest drive? Who can pull off the best Mickey Mantle? PSA 10, 1952, they're all trying to almost outdo each other in a sense. So that's the one element of the show that I don't think it's covered enough. I don't think people know about it enough. But that's a big reason why this show happens every year, because there's literally these guys a whale from Australia, six-figure whale from Australia, waits for the show every year, flies out here maybe on a freaking private jet, and drops freaking six figures like it's nothing and flies home.
Wow.
and can't wait to come back for the next year. So, I mean, there are whales of different proportions, Maybe a blowout whale spends $10,000 a month, or maybe a group breakers whale spends several thousand. But there are some whales who come here and drop freaking six figures. And then the one dealer, literally some guy just walked up, and they came up on a number for every single freaking card he brought. And this guy's been going to the National for 20 years, and he says it's never happened before.
Wow.
So
that is crazy.
Here's another crazy thing this dealer told me. So I mean, it was the quickest four-hour flight of my life because I'm talking to this guy the whole time. He bought an old PSA DNA basketball card on eBay for $180 and sold it to one of his whales for $1,500 2 months later at the show. So this guy literally knows his whales, knows his customers, knows what they like, and he's not afraid to kind of bend them over and stick them on a $1,200 profit for him, because these guys don't get on eBay. Whales don't shop on eBay. Whales wait for something like this where they can kind of get around their big, you know, it's like a country club. You go, you know, you have a few drinks, you kind of look at the little pretty little girls, and not that there's not the national at the country club, there's definitely usually some pretty little girls around, and you see who's got the biggest wallet. So
well, that
that's
actually,
the one element of the show that I don't think gets covered, that I don't think anybody really talks about, are these freaking ballers that you can't even pick out. You can't even pick these guys out, really. You literally have to kind of stumble across them or sit next to them on a plane or go into the air. Like, it's weird. But they're out there. Like, these guys are real ballers.
Well, that actually kind of led me into my next question, and that is very interesting because, you know, you don't definitely see that. And they just probably look like ordinary dudes. You don't see them walking around in suits at a sports card, you know, convention. But my next question is you know, everybody has that dream of finding a, you know, the opposite sex of something that they're interested in, and, you know, like that share common interests. So, you know, in terms of gender percentage, do you think, you know, you're a 30-year-old guy, do you think there's any chance at the National that you're able to find a woman that would be able to date you percentage-wise? What do you think the percentage-wise is there as far as men to women?
Are you asking me or Ryan?
Whoever wants to take it first. What's the percentage of male to female?
You got to be careful, Dan, because I think you're taking, but...
Yeah, let's see. Hold up. What are the chances of meeting somebody? Not even okay. Like actually meeting them and something
It was kind of a two-part question. I thought I was going to be a little clever with my question,
I'll tell you right now. I mean, it was probably 3% females at the show, maybe 2% maybe.
Wow.
Single females, maybe half a percent. Maybe a quarter of 1%. I mean, I say it all. It's all dudes all day is what it is. It's that I mean, everybody knows. Like it's not like, I mean, the Panini VIP party. Okay, they had some girls there. Hired girls to go there and hang out and talk to dudes. Very hot. Not going to sugarcoat it. And I was talking to him. I was like, hey, so what's up? I'm like, you guys.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah. I almost said that. But, no, I was like, so what's the deal? I'm like, you guys get hired? You guys get contracted out by Panini when they come to town? And they're like, pretty much. Like, we all live in Cleveland. And it was kind of the same thing in Chicago. All those girls were, like, from Chicago. And they're basically paid there to mingle with, I guess you would consider – Panini, we like the people who are there, that's Panini's whales. So it's just an added little perk to go there and kind of hang out, and they bring girls.
And they go whale fishing.
They go whale fishing. no, but the girls at the Panini party were top notch, and they've always been top notch. You saw them last year, Doug. I know you're married and about ready to have a child, but You're not blind. You can see it. You know.
Yep.
You know, hot chick.
but none walking around in the show. No, none buying packs.
I did not see any girls going. Like, I didn't see any girls like really running over to join into group breaks or any girls like in line trying to get their Andrew Luck, like, you know, graded by Beckett or. The girls at the Panini booth, they were working for Panini. I honestly didn't even go by the top booth, the tops booth. I know Ryan spent a little bit of time there. I walked by it a little bit. I didn't see anything really going on except for every 2 hours you would get a bunch of people screaming nonsense, like playing like some kind of guess a number game, or you get a pack of Ginter, the loudest two screams. I don't know what was going on. Maybe Ryan can like. Enlighten me a little bit with what was going on, but every once in a while you'd hear like some commotion of screaming going on over there.
They were filling redemptions, Vegas vacation style, where you got to guess the number of the what he's holding behind his back, or
I have no idea, but it was. I gotta say, it was pretty loud.
They're all, get this Yasiel Puig live. Guess what number I'm holding behind my back? 5. Nope, 7. Sorry, don't get it filled today.
Guess what number? Guess the number I'm thinking of. Guess.
Well,
ooh,
you know,
I had
just
to pull the phone
just,
away from my
ear. You know what I just realized? I, you know, growing up, I had some really bad interest in order to date women because I liked metal and I went to metal shows. No chicks there. No chicks there.
Well,
and
I was going to tell you the same. I was going to say the same thing.
I start collecting cards. No chicks there. So, I mean, my first child's going to be, you know, a daughter, my daughter. So if I have, you know, a boy, I'd be like, you know, you could do this card collecting thing. But, you know, if you want to, you want to hang out with some chicks, you need to. You know, you need to get the Britney Spears concerts, go to the country show, stuff like that. So I just, I should have diversified my portfolio of interests. Yeah, the metal's cool, but, you know, I gotta hit up this Luke Bryan concert or something. You know what I mean? Like,
I was going to say the same thing. Like, you asked me the question if there was any girls there, and I mean, there was a handful, few and far between, but I'm like, I was going to say it's the same thing as going to like a local metal show, and there's like 18 people there, and none of them are girls, and people are just getting drunk and trying to get in a mosh pit and stuff like that. I'm like, it's kind of the same thing, minus getting drunk in the mosh pits, but it's kind of the same deal. Less tattoos, I gotta say.
Trevor's got a good point. Yoga class. That's where it's at.
Yeah.
Yoga class.
Hanging out. Yoga class. But Jason Aldean, Toby Keith, Luke Bryan. If you want to meet girls, those are the shows that you go to.
Yeah,
you go there. And,
I know you say
you'll be golden.
You may say the music sucks, but you know, hey, it's a small price to pay.
Also, you can try going to like a, they may be a little bit older, but a Motley Crue show. You'll see some talent. Yeah, because like those older pop metal chicks are pretty hot. What else was I thinking? Oh, like a Nickelback show. There you go. Mm. Chicks like Nickelback.
I want winners.
playing fantasy football probably isn't going to help.
Not a lot of
girls in that demographic either.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. I know we're trying to give dating lessons here. Probably the last three guys to give dating lessons to.
Yeah,
but,
probably don't want dating lessons from me.
No, not me either. Anyway,
or me.
let's move on to what is. I'll start with Ryan on this one. What is the best thing that you've seen at the show?
The best thing. I've never seen a BGF 10 Michael Jordan. A rookie card in person that Brian Gray supposedly, I think somebody told me he paid $65,000 for it, I think, and he was asking $100,000 for it. I don't think I've ever seen one of those. I also saw a PSA 10 Derek Jeter 1993 SP rookie, and the dealer told me there was only 13 of those.
Wow.
So that's really rare, because that card's about as plentiful as the Jordan. I mean, the Jordan rookie's not exactly rare, because it's been graded like over 10,000 times or some insane amount of number. But it's very hard to find either of those cards in very good condition, especially a pristine and or a PSA 10. With Kurt Cobain autograph.
Oh yeah. I saw your tweet on that. Yeah.
I haven't seen that. I haven't. If $6,000 wasn't SHIT to me, I would have bought it. Honestly, like, I would have snap bought it.
How many Kurt Cobain autos do you think are out there? I haven't even seen one, or even seen one on eBay or anything. It doesn't seem like that guy signed a whole lot.
It's hard to find, and it was interesting what it was signed on. I had him take it out and show me the back, and I actually took a picture of the back. It was like a chiropractor's business card. I'll have to check the picture, but it was weird. It was probably some guy who met Cobain somehow, and he got him to sign the back of his business card. I would have snap bought it if I had that kind of money. I'd have to research what his autograph is really worth, but I imagine in 10 to 20 years, that thing is going to be worth a lot more than any one of his autographs is going to be worth more than whatever the market price is right now. Like, I actually think his autograph would be, his autograph's going to go Jimi Hendrix, you know, the Beatles guys, you know, everybody from our era, is going to remember or is going to remember him.
Right.
So, you know, that was probably one of the – and I bought an Eddie Vedder guitar pick, so obviously that's right up there too. But those are more personal kind of things that I bought. So, I mean, I didn't buy the Cobain. I wish I had that kind of dough. I wish I was a whale.
Well, just to – as you were talking there, I looked up the 86-87 Fleer on BGS, and it's pop five. So there's five
right.
BGS 10s.
Yeah, that's what the guy – I think that's what the guy told me. And Charlie Sheen one time bought one for $200,000. So you can see that the price has actually gone down.
Wow, that's insane. You know, to put it in comparison, I never looked up Jordan rookies on a pop scale. There's 352 9.5s. That's a lot. I mean, some of them are probably in private collections, mm-hmm. but that is a lot. I mean, for people to sell mm-hmm. those, I mean, those things go for what, 10, 20 grand easy?
A 9.5, BGS 9.5, I think sells for about yes, I actually have a thing on my website where I track that card. Damn it, I think it is over 10,000. And if you have a really good deal, I want to say is in that $6,000 range. I'd have to go back and look. But 10 G's, I think, for 9.5.
Believe it or not, there was 8 that were graded a 1. So somebody just, you know, getting it in there. There was 23 graded 1.5, 24 graded 2, 39 graded 2.5. So these guys probably just pulled them out of some shoe boxes and went, oh, you know what? It's still a Jordan. Let's send it in. So let's see what happens. So, but Dan, what is the best thing you've seen at the show? And I'm not talking about the I'm not talking about the soft serve cones either. So I know you were thinking that, but
okay. Well, first off, I didn't get a soft serve cone. That was Shane. First day we get there, runs up, gets an ice cream cone. I'm like, all right, man, whatever. I see where your priorities are at. You know, I love the memorabilia that you just don't see. And my favorite thing that I saw there, because I am a super fan, at Leaf's booth they had, and I was going to buy it. I just did not have the time to sit down and just get it. But they had a Lars Ulrich signed drum head.
Oh, wow.
For $100.
Wow, that's awesome.
Good deal. Remo drum
good
head,
deal.
Like legitimate. Really, really like sharp looking. Lars Ulrich, his signature is awful. It's hideous. It's one of the worst I think I've ever seen. It was pretty bad. But they also had a Kirk Hammett, Jason Newsted signed album of Load, and you know how much I like that album. So that was $199. So I do got to say, Leaf had some really cool like music memorabilia stuff, and I know there's a market for that stuff, and there's got to be a market for making that stuff and putting it in a product.
Yeah.
Cut autos of Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, Eddie Vedder. You can probably get autos out there. You can probably find them on eBay. Cut auto of like Lane Staley would be very cool. You can also do like dual autos with like a Joe Satriani, Steve Vai type deal. I mean, there's like so many possibilities, and I think like sports, there's people who love sports, but there's also people who love music.
Yes.
And I think it would actually get a lot more people from, like that like sports that never understood that they can actually get autos of their favorite sports players. And I think it would actually broaden the whole spectrum of the hobby.
Dude, believe it or not, because Lane Staley sells for a lot.
I know. This is a product that if it came out, it would not be cheap. But you would be getting, like, some serious memorabilia. And like, I would say that music collectors and music enthusiasts are just as nuts about their collectibles as any sports fan.
Yeah.
But a Lane Staley auto goes for how much?
$300 minimum.
See, I think if you put that
there was one sold for $67, but it did have no authentication. So, but there was one that Alice in Chains signed by the whole band PSA of $1,400. So, signed shirt $300.
You can also you can get the memorabilia stuff. You can definitely do. You can cut up drumsticks. You can put guitar picks and pit and cards. You can do set list. Set list would be very cool, especially if it's like a set list and it's dated to a specific show. People would love that stuff. You can do obviously clothing, memorabilia, stuff like that, and you can also do a download code for an album.
Yeah.
And that's something that say you pull a Joe Satriani auto with a pick, but you also get a download of a specific album that's included. And at that point, the record label would probably look at that and go,
somebody's gonna steal this idea. So you need to stop.
No, I mean, a record label would look at that and go, this is another way to move units. This is another way to basically sell our product.
You know, I want to say that, and I know we're going off topic here, but I want to say that there was some kind of hip-hop product that came out like that. I don't think they had autographs, but I think there was something with, Snoop Dogg and Tupac. It was mostly hip-hop, and they had trading cards, and I think there was downloads attached. I don't think they did the memorabilia thing or the auto thing, but I remember seeing it in Target, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I was like, what is this? And I didn't really take time to pay attention to it at the time because I wasn't interested.
If you did a hip hop set and you had cut autos of Tupac and Biggie, and I mean, dude, that stuff would be nuts. That would be crazy. There is people who would absolutely collect that.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan and I had a long talk about it. When we were hanging out, I keep on saying it because I want somebody to do it. I don't have the time or money to do it. So I'm just trying to get my word out there, get somebody to do it because I want to collect it.
Yeah.
Or don't make me do it, guys. I'll basically scour eBay and just pick up as many autos as I can, and you just got to send them into the PSA and get them authenticated. But
that's what I'm looking at right now. I'm trying to find some stuff here. But I wanted to move on to what is the worst thing that you saw or heard at the show, and we'll start with Dan on this one.
Oh, yeah, man. Okay. The worst thing. Well, it's going to be the obvious thing, and it's not because I don't like this company. I have a lot of respect for them. And I know why they did it, but from the consumer standpoint, it's not going to be a great thing, is the exclusive license of the NFL going to Panini. Hard to get excited about that, knowing that if they control the whole market, chances are, if you control the whole market, you dictate the value, and you can basically put out whatever you want, and it doesn't have to be a great product because you have no competition.
Right.
I want to think that's not going to happen because I do have a lot of respect for Panini, and I do like a lot of the stuff they do. And it's not a perfect world. Not everybody can do everything the way. And plus, in this industry, you could make an amazing product like Spectra, and people still hate it. People will still rag on it. There's too many golds. You're devaluing the golds. The patches are too nice. You're making too many nice patches. I mean, you can't win. Some people are going to they're going to complain just to complain. That's just the way it is. And it's probably that way in a lot of other industries as well. But I think having one company basketball has been decent at times. But I think if there was competition, basketball would be better for the end consumer, for our customers. Basketball would be better if there was another company doing it at the same time. Because I think just competition, it pushes you. It pushes you to come up with new ideas and, and just push the envelope constantly and try to just innovate what we're trying to do here. So I got to say, that was the worst thing that I heard, was the fact that Tops, and I rag on Tops as well, is that it's going to be one company that's going to have the NFL license.
And we'll switch over to Ryan.
Definitely off the top of my head, one of the employees at Upper Deck got a bunch of boxes stolen from him.
Oh, man.
I think at his hotel room. Another couple guys, a dealer got jacked pretty bad, and it was at his hotel room. So that's why these whales and people who are kind of ballers, that's why they kind of lay low. And because there's something where they know where you're staying and somehow they can get into your hotel room. And, I mean, that's real shady. So, you know, I would just caution anybody if you're coming with a lot of dough or, you know, or you're buying a lot of stuff and you have it at your hotel room, be very careful who you talk to or who you tell about that. Or I like to switch rooms. Like, I'll stay at a hotel for a night or two and go to another hotel room. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm moving around all over the place, unless it's a nice hotel room or I got a good deal. I'll jump around each night just to kind of, you know, I don't know, a little safer that way. But yeah, that's pretty bad. I heard about those kind of thefts. So
you're right. I kind of contribute that. I learned a lesson like that actually early on in life. I used to be a big stereo guy in my car. I used to always have a nice stereo system and stuff like that, blasting either metal or hip hop. And you know, I learned that, you know, you can't really go home blasting your music and then park, because then you're like, hey, I got a stereo. So, you know, that's kind of like same thing with these car dealers, is like, hey, don't tell everybody that you got all this money and then like let them follow you. You know, you got to lay low. So I learned that, you know, 2 miles from my house, I got the radio down. I got everything hidden and stuff like that. I had my car stereo stolen like 2 or 3 times when I was younger. So it kind of taught me a lesson. But, yeah, you got to lay kind of low. And that sucks. I mean, that people, karma will come around for those kind of people. I mean, it's just terrible.
Yeah. Really is.
So, but, all right, going to the next topic. And we will talk about the NFL exclusive a little bit more before the show ends, as far as, you know, opinions on why it sucks, and then why also how also maybe we can make it better. I mean, how not we, but well, what we can do to contribute to make it better, and what Panini can do to make it better. So we'll get into that at some point as well. So let's talk a little bit about we'll talk about the Breaker Pavilion as well, but we'll talk a little bit about the Panini VIP party, which Dan attended. Kind of give us the lay of the land and what you saw there, and how Panini carried themselves.
Panini threw an absolute top-notch party. Pulled out all the stops. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm getting like a lot of static, but sorry about that. But yeah, throughout like a top-notch party. The way they did the autographs this year was amazing, and I hope they keep on doing it. So they hired their athletes to go out there, and you had Dr. J, Dominique Wilkins, Kyrie Irving, Johnny Manziel, Tom Glavine, Jose Canseco, Joe Namath. Am I forgetting anybody else? Oh, Trey Burke.
Trey Burke
was there. And I feel like I'm forgetting somebody else, but maybe not. And it had basically just amazing food set out, kind of buffet style, so you just get up and get what you want, open bar. But what they did that was amazing this year, as opposed to last year it was set up like when you get autographs at a card show. You basically sit in line, you go up, you get them signed, take a picture, and then you move on to the next line. This year, they had the players mingle within the people that were the people who were there at the party. They were just mingling around, talking to people, and then they had like somebody with them with all the autographed 8x10s that were just handing them out to people. And then they would sign your badge. So if you had like a TG on your badge, you got a Tom Glavine auto. So that's how they kept track of how many you would get. But, yeah, I mean, Tom Glavine basically sat at our table for about 15 minutes, had a conversation with Mike about what player he just could not get out in the big leagues.
Oh, wow.
He
nice.
Said he said his hardest out was Mike Redmond.
Huh.
He's like, I just could not get Mike Redmond.
I was hoping you were going to say Barry Bonds, but I guess I didn't.
No, I mean, he said the obvious guy.
Yeah.
He said the obvious guys like, he's all Barry Bonds, like Tony Gwynn, all the main guys. He's like, those guys were hard to hit or hard to pitch against. But he's all, everybody can get Mike Redmond out, but I couldn't. He's all, that guy was like a 380 hitter against me. He's like, I just could not get him out. He's like, I would cringe every time that guy would come up to the plate. So he had a long conversation with Mike about that. Very, very cool dude. Super laid back. Had time to basically talk to everybody. He would sit there and just have a good conversation. Jose Canseco is a good dude. I was privileged to play poker with him one night at the casino in Cleveland, which was kind of surreal and very cool. No. Not me, dude. I was just shoved into a seat. I'm like, what's going on? That's why I have no idea. How I got here. But yeah, played in the cash game with Jose Canseco. Good dude. Knows how to play poker. Pretty good player, actually.
Sure, it wasn't Ozzy.
Yeah, I know. Everybody was saying. I knew you were going to say it was probably. It could have been Ozzy. You know, it could have been. To be honest with you. I mean, whoever it was. Whoever played poker with me recognized me the next day. So it could have been Ozzy both nights. I'm not sure.
Gotcha.
Well,
you know what? I wanted to just, you know, people are saying, what's this PNBAP party? Some of you may not know that listen to the show, but basically to backlog it, it's collectors that spent $7,500 and dealers that spent $10,000 got entry into the VIP party, and that is on Panini products. So, and you get the silver packs on top of it. So it's kind of a Panini's way of saying, you know, thank you, basically. And they threw this off the bash. So I just want to let you guys, what is this VIP party? All these people are. So that's how you get in. I also, what percentage were group breakers that were there?
Well, some breakers brought like 10 guys. So, I mean, there was 125. There was 125 people at the party.
Huh.
125 people, not including Panini employees. Probably not including distributors. So there was probably 125 customers of Panini that were
so
there.
So it's safe to say 50% maybe?
I would say closer to 75 to 80%.
Wow.
Wow.
If not even a little bit more.
Wow.
I would honestly say that as from a customer, I don't know if there was more than 10 customers there.
Wow. That's crazy.
So that,
if
that were not,
Panini didn't have the breaking industry, there'd be like 20 people at this party, you're saying, basically.
I would say there would be like 10 to 15 people at the party that were, and if you count the distributors, then it would probably be like 25, 30 people.
You know, it would be interesting to see because, you know, we went to the last year's VIP party, which I would say the number's about the close to maybe 50% last year. But they had one the year before. I would have loved to see the amount of people that showed up to that because it might have only been like 30 people.
Well, I mean, are we saying like blowout? They do group breaks. So are we gonna say blowout?
Yeah. So how many guys did blowout have there, would you say?
Probably six or seven.
Okay.
Maybe six. Between five and seven.
You know what makes you wonder if they had to hit the same criteria that everyone else did, or they just got kind of grandfathered in.
I mean, I think we only had one of our customers who were there.
Huh.
That I mean, obviously not solely our customer, probably has like a local card shop, deals with their blowout or something like that. But I did run into one of our customers at the VIP party. But I gotta say, like, people not attached to group breaks. It was almost a party for group breakers.
Panini VIP group break party.
Pretty much. It was a blast. I mean, absolutely, just like I said, top notch party. Well put together, well planned. There wasn't one person in that party that was having a bad time. If you had a bad time at that party, you are hopeless.
Did you try the sushi?
Hell no, dude. Hell no.
Oh, man. It still didn't break down, huh?
I look at that, and I'm like, dude, I like my dude. They had, like, a pulled pork on cornbread. Oh, my God. I was like.
Really? Wow.
So I'm like, dude, you guys have doggy bags? I'm like, take this shit home. Actually, I was going to go meet up with Ryan. I was like, dude, Ryan might want to try some of this.
Damn right.
Do you think it would have been possible for you to get the Panini girl to hand feed you?
God. I mean, dude, they talked to me like I was like a really interesting guy, and I'm not.
So you're like you were the Dos Equis guy there. You're like the most interesting man.
Yeah.
In the room.
Yeah. I mean, they were asking me more questions than I think I've ever had three chicks ask me in a span of 10 minutes. I was like, it's hard for me to look at them and go, well, girls, what I do, backs right here. See the ones that you're opening? That's what I do. Does that, you like that? It's hard. I don't think chicks get excited about that.
Were you the skinniest guy in the room?
Don't answer that.
I'm just kidding. Because I am a fat guy.
First off, I used to be skinny. I'm not skinny anymore. I'm getting old. I drink too much beer now. I don't work out as much as I do. So I'm not as skinny as I used to be. I would say Carlos was probably the skinniest guy at the party. Probably the shortest guy at the party, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. But, I mean, yeah, you know. I mean, I hate the stereotype card collectors, but we all like eating.
Yeah. I mean, since I've been sitting on my ass opening cards, I think I gained like 50, 60 pounds, so it's very easy to do.
Card collectors very, very rarely do we turn down the double bacon cheeseburger.
Right.
I mean, that's usually like, okay, bring that on. I like that.
Well,
I've been
practicing on how to open the packs one-handed so that I can have a cheeseburger in the other. Because I can't go that long. I mean, 2 hours for a group break, I can't really, you know, I can't go longer without eating. So I need to eat while I'm breaking. So I need to figure that out, like, off the camera, and I can just use, like, one-handed pack technique.
I feel you, dude. I was eating some nachos, and I kind of blew off Tom Gladden. I'm sitting there, I'm eating my nachos. He comes up, taps me on the shoulder. He's like, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, pretty good. And back in my mind, I'm like, guys, what are you doing? Like, I'm trying to eat my nachos here. And he's like, I'm Tom Gladden. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, I just blew off Tom Gladden. He's all, dude, I know. He's like, dude, you're eating your nachos. Don't worry. And I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, let's stop. Let's talk a little bit. Even though I felt like a dick. I was like, I'm sorry, man. I hate to say I didn't realize it was you, but I didn't.
So you guys, before we move on, we're going to do the group break pavilion topic next. Do you think, because you guys, you know, you guys actually had Jose, this is the VIP party. You played Jose Canseco. Played Jose. You play poker with Jose Canseco, but you got Jose Canseco and the Panini girls to open up cards for you guys, the VIP gold packs. Do you think they were truly enjoying that?
Okay, so let me go ahead and explain how this all went down. Jose Canseco was late to the opening party at our table, so we had a table there, and Mike. For people who know, Long Arms Mike does breaks with us, went up and asked the Panini girls, hey, you girls look bored. You guys want to open up some packs. So they were, like, excited. So three of them came over. They're opening up packs, and they were, like, you know, being all super energetic and saying, like, oh, is this a good one? And all this stuff. They're, like, showing Nono, like, is this a good one? And he's like, yeah, I don't know. You show him. I don't know if any of this stuff. I don't know what any of this stuff is. But Nono was just stoked that the girls were hanging out. So he's like, I could hang out here. So they were excited
doing
to open
happy
up
dance?
Cards. Because
doing the happy dance?
So Jose Canseco only came over to open up packs because the girls were over there. It had nothing to do with the fact that he was like, oh, man, like, I want to open up packs, too. It was like, no, these guys, these douchebags over here got the three chicks that I want to hang out with. I need to go over there and take them back. And I'm like, sweet, I get it. Like, so he went over there, and he's like, hey, you guys want me to open up a pack, too? And then he struggled a little bit. I had to show him how to do it. I had to pull off the guns and be like, hey, man, like, this is how you rip foil, bro. but yeah, he was looking. He wanted a Babe Ruth, is what he was looking for. I told him he was probably going to get a Jose Canseco.
Probably no chance that there was a Babe Ruth in that in any of those packs. So
yeah, probably not. And then he was having a good time. But then he opened up two packs and he was like, "Yeah, I'm done. I'm gonna go over here now." And then the girls like hung out for like another 10 minutes, and then they went over and hung out with him. Which I get it. Like, if I was a chick, I wouldn't want to hang out with me. I mean, if I had a choice, like, you could hang out with this dude, or you could hang out with Jose Canseco. You got to go Jose Canseco all day long. I'd go with Ozzy. If it was Ozzy, if it really was Ozzy, I'd be like, fine, I'll hang out with Ozzy.
Well, I'm surprised that he actually, you saw him the night before, and then you saw him again, because pretty sure that guy works out, like, 8 hours a day. So, I mean, he probably doesn't have much time to do anything else but like work out.
I mean, dude, he's in good shape. He definitely goes to the gym far more than I do.
Yes, me too. I think he's went more to the gym more in 1 week than I've been in the last 10 years. So
yeah, I can't even spell gym. I have no idea what is that. Is that
you spell you spell gym J-I-M like Jim Tomey?
No, I spell it like cheeseburger. Like, why go to the gym when I can just – I work out when I eat. Like,
Slim
gotta,
Jim. That's a Slim
get,
Jim.
Yeah. Slim Jim is more my style. I mean, beef stick.
Well, let's go ahead and I know we're not going to dance around the group break pavilion topic, so let's just dive right in. Ryan has a video on YouTube that you can watch, which is pretty entertaining. I highly suggest it. Let's start with Ryan. I mean, what are your thoughts? We kind of had our ideas before about it, and if you guys don't know, we're obviously group breakers ourselves, me and Dan. If you didn't already know that, what was your idea and your take on the group breaker pavilion?
Is it me? Because
it's you. It's you.
I gotta be careful.
Sorry. Let it go, dude. Just do what you gotta do.
Okay, well, let it flow. Well, I'll be honest. I mean, well, we talked about it. We talked about it on air and off air, of course. We knew that it was going to be a little bit of cricket savant. We know it's the old man whale show. So I went over there took a video, and guess what, guys? I'm gonna do, if it's gonna be my video, and I'm gonna put it on my YouTube page, and I'm gonna do it's under my website. I'm gonna put myself in the best light. So if I say something's gonna be the crickets pavilion, I'm gonna go over there when it looks like crickets and shoot a video. So if group breakers maybe didn't like that, or go shoot your own video. And, you guys have webcams and, all that stuff. Shoot your own video and portray it in a different light. So it was definitely the Crickets Pavilion. First of all, it was on the side. Second of all, the reason why they're kind of buttering this crew up, and because they want these guys to come back next year. They want the Ripping Wax guy to buy more spots next year and come back next year. But you're still going to be on the side. You're going to be on the side for 5, 6, 7 years until some of these old dealers kick off and you can move closer to the show floor. So it's, I mean, I think the internet worked well. I don't think the streaming was a problem, but, you know, this is going to show you, I hope this is pretty clear on how bad I think the Cricket's Pavilion was. I actually felt bad for the people there. Not everybody. I think there are a couple guys who are doing pretty good probably normally do well. But I, you know, I wasn't going to go do day two at the Cricket's Pavilion. Not every group breaker is a bad guy. I've been doing a podcast for damn near 2 years with two group breakers. That's, you know, it should be a ringing endorsement for MojoBreak.com that they have, you know, one of the quote-unquote group break haters. Well, if I'm such a group break hater, I've been on doing this podcast for 2 years you guys. And hung out with your whole crew every time there's one of these little events or the summit or the national. You know, I'm hanging out with the whole crew. So that should be ringing endorsement, you know, for MojoBreak.com. And if MojoBreak.com had a booth over in the Group Breaker Pavilion, probably wouldn't have done a video. So I hope people kind of think things through a little more. I don't hate group breakers. I don't hate all group breakers. In fact, you two guys are like my best friends, and you guys, you know, you guys already know that. So, yeah. You know, it's not like this is like breaking news over here. So, you know, we had discussed how it was going to be Cricket's Pavilion. I went over there when it served my best interest because it was going on my YouTube page, and I showed the Cricket's Pavilion. And it was Thursday. Yeah, it's a VIP day, but where were those guys? Why weren't they sitting there at the table? You know, it wasn't like Friday, Saturday, Sunday was a whole big difference. You know, there was empty spots. There wasn't a whole lot of breaking going on. It sounded like the guys that were at home did fine. You know, it wasn't like, oh, my God, all this business went over to these guys at the pavilion. In fact, it might have been the complete opposite. The guys who had their normal setup, and it was the normal time, and it was the normal schedule, and it was maybe some different products, and it was, you know, it did fine. It was a normal week, maybe even a better week, because there were some products coming out. So that's the bottom line on that. I'm not saying group breaking is bad or this, and this, and I certainly don't have anything against it. I'm super interested in the business of sports cards. And guess what? If 75% of the people at this VIP party were group breakers, that's a whole business that I'm very, very interested in and that I'm going to look at. The same way if 1,000 card stores started opening up across the country, guess who would hit the road and go on tour and check these things out? Or if some sort of innovation, a bunch of people started websites where they're selling pull boxes, I would check all those websites out and vet them. And I sold 50,000 cards on Check Out My Cards because I'm truly interested in the business of sports cards. And if group breaking is this new thing that when I got back into this, I didn't hear about group breaks in 2008. So this is a new thing. It interests me. It doesn't piss me off. It actually interests me. So it's fascinating. And I'd love to see it get to a point where it's not Cricket's Pavilion, where there's old men. But what if you did a group break of some of these boxes I was tweeting that were like $70,000 and they were like 1960 Topps baseball? To be honest, I actually think some of these old man whales, if they could conceptualize the break, they would do it. Because $50,000 is nothing to them. Okay, I'll do a break of 1960 Topps baseball or 1975 Topps Cello baseball. It'd be hell expensive. You'd have to know your customer. You'd have to have some whales. But honestly, it'd be better than this super break crap or this crap they're pushing on all these breakers. And to be honest, I think Panini and these distributors are just, you know, I'll just be free and easy. I think they're just trying to butt jam all these group breakers, and the VIP party is really just a way to, you know, not lose you guys or not turn, you know, you be Panini's buddy and, oh, this is okay. And then when Black Friday hits, you got to buy everything at this full retail to get all these Black Friday hits. When Father's Day hits, you got to buy all this product at full retail to get in. When the VIP party, you had to buy all this product, all this junky product at full price just to get into the VIP party. Not that, you know, the smart group breakers, and I'm talking to two of them right now,
probably turned around and did okay with that. It wasn't a loss. It wasn't a loss. It, you know, going to the party can actually, one, you're making connections. Two, you're hanging out with Jose Canseco. Three, you're pimping with models. And four, you might end up making a buck at the end of the day. And to me, that sounds pretty cool. If I can go to a party, hang out with Jose Canseco, and open some packs with the sell models and make money, wow, that's a pretty good deal. But frankly, there's probably only a couple of group breakers in that room where that's the case. Whereas next year, it could be a totally different group of breakers or maybe some other niche or who knows. So it was the Cricket's Pavilion. I noticed all the things that you said, oh, this is blowing up and this is so big. You know, they took over the National. You weren't there. Like, you were either aligned with group breaks and you're biased for that, or you weren't there. Because it was the Cricket's Pavilion. It wasn't, you know, whales standing around spending $10,000 to get into these spots.
Yeah. And what I wanted to, you know, kind of speak, because I don't know, we may have talked about it on the show, but, you know, we may have some new people listening in. It's like, why weren't you guys there? And basically, you know, we've been breaking since 2010, BojoBreak.com, and we have done breaks on the road. We were the first breakers to do live summit breaks, which we kind of brought our customer base into the summit and, you know, showed them around. And, you know, we had them breaking with Brian Gray and, you know, Hackler, all these guys that were there. Every time we've taken the break on the road, there's been problems. And what's compromised is our customers, because we lose internet feed. We the videos don't get uploaded in a timely manner. The something happens. Something's not on time. And then just, you know, when you're there, I like to be comfortable. When I'm comfortable here, I'm entertaining you guys, because there is a little bit of an entertainment element to group breaks. Let's face it. I know you guys are buying cards, but I like to entertain you guys. I like to joke around, laugh. We have our stupid little drops and stuff like that. And when you're at your, when you're in unfamiliar territory, you're on a high stress level. You know, whether you could, these guys say, no, I was comfortable or not. No, you're not. Because you're not at the place you've been breaking for however long you've been breaking. So we, and I like David Gelfand. That guy, he's a good guy. He's a nice guy, and I think his intentions were the best. I think he was actually trying to grow this side of the industry. But we felt like we would be sacrificing the end product by doing 4 days worth of breaks there, by you guys happen to look at these guys walking around, you know, and everybody asking questions. And it's like, you know, you guys buying the break spots are customers, I'm saying. Some of you guys that listen to the show aren't customers. You just listen to the show. But we would compromise our end product. I mean, Dan had an internet problem. We only did two breaks there, and Dan had an internet problem. It was out of his control. So, I mean, just out of the two breaks, we had an issue. So, and those customers were throwing in some free boxes, because it just, stuff happens. So we've just, and the fact that, you know, we did every time we've taken the breaks on the road, we have not sold one spot to somebody there. So it does not make sense for our business model to go to an event where we're just going to sell to our same customers anyway. Our same people are going to be in the room. It doesn't make sense to be there. So that's the stance that we took on the event. Now I'm not, if I was just starting group breaks, I probably would have said, hey, I'll take the shot of going there and trying to gain new clientele. I absolutely see why there's a great opportunity there. But where they're at, location, stuff like that, a lot of these guys broke at night. Now they're forced to break during the day. Probably not the, you know, it's not, you're not going to, you train your customers differently. But I also kind of have, and I'm going to kind of just speak this broadly. At the end of a day, a group breaker is not a rock star. Some of these guys have the biggest freaking egos. I see it on Twitter. I see it on their feeds. You know, you open up sports cards for a living. That's it. No one cares. There's 30 people that care, and you're just trying to entertain and provide the best value for your customers. You don't need to act like you drive a Maserati. You don't need to act like you're Brad Pitt. You don't need to walk around with your, like your shit doesn't stink, and then treat people like shit because of it. So, I mean, just check your ego at the door and realize what you do for a living. You're not saving lives. You know what I'm saying? You're not freaking sold out shows. You're not Lady Gaga. You're not freaking Metallica. Like, just check your ego at the door. You know, without customers, without people buying into breaks, that's who you need to focus on. You need to make sure you take care of your customers, and don't let it get to your head. Yes, you're in, on video and you're pulling some amazing cards, but that's it. That's at the end of the day, that's it. So that's all I'm going to say. I mean, I'm using that term broadly. Dan, what was Dan, after my rant there? What was your
no? And I get what you're saying about the egos. I mean, I didn't really find out about the Jose Canseco thing until at our party. And I literally went up to Ryan and I was like, man, I don't really know if I want to go. I kind of rather hang out with you guys, to be honest. And,
he's like,
you're going out and you're hanging out. He's like, dude, don't, no. He's like, dude, you're going. He's like, if I got to like get you on that bus, he's like, you're going. I'm like, because I was like, man, I'm like, I kind of, honestly, I'd rather hang out with Ryan than Jose Canseco. So, I mean, I was like, man, I'm like, I rarely get to see Ryan. He wasn't able to go to the summit last year. So I wasn't able to hang out there in Vegas. So I'm like, man, I'm like, I'd kind of rather just have a night on the town with Ryan. So I actually considered not going until Ryan basically talked me into it. I was like, okay, I'm like, I'll go. But, yeah, I mean, you just got to – we are guys who just basically open up cards. And we I will never have an ego about this. I won't. It's just not in my character. It is what it is.
And I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is reminding me of somebody that called me out on Twitter. I make less money. I'm just speaking of me in general. I make less money opening sports cards than I did at my other day job, but my other day job sucked. So for those people think that, you know, somebody that called me out on Twitter saying that, you know, I make all this money and stuff like that, it's I'll show you my bank account right now. So just putting it out there like that. I'm not balling by any means. So I'm passionate about sports cards. I was able, and Dan as well, and now Mike and Shane were able to do what we love for a living, and we make less money doing it, but you know, you enjoy going to work every day, and that's the bottom line.
We pay our shipping guy more than we make.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Riddle me that. Like, if we're balling, I mean, come on. Like,
yeah.
I have worked another full-time job the whole time I've been doing this. I just bought a music store. If I was balling, you think I would just – I would be just going on vacations.
You're not helping your case. You're not helping your case by saying you bought a music store. You should probably let that fact out.
No. bought a music store to try to subsidize my income. It's not like I bought it because I'm like, oh, I want another hobby. No, I bought it because that's my career. I mean, that's what I've done my whole life. So it basically happened where, dude, I saved up money the whole time I've been doing this to do this, and that's not balling. If I was balling, I wouldn't be going into other ventures.
Right.
I'd basically be like, well, I got my long group break money waiting for me, and I'm just gonna go buy a Mojo break jet. And we're gonna basically, Doug and I are gonna fly around the world just do breaks on our private jet.
Yeah, me too. Listen to me carefully. Do you think Shaq got rich playing in Orlando? No, we got rich playing in college. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. So, for anybody who thinks that we're like balling, not going down. I'll show you my tax return. It's not balling.
Yeah, it's just, you know, a wise man once said, you do what you love for a living, and it does. I love going. People that are, you know, going to work on or it's Sunday, and I hang out with my wife's family, and they're like, oh, it's Monday. I'm like, dude, I'm ready to go back. I love it. You know, I love, to this day, I still love opening packs of cards. I don't care how many times I've opened up a lead. You know, you think after, I thought going into this, 2 years, 3 years later, I'd be like, man, another case of freaking cards. No, I love it. I love hanging out with it. And it's probably the fact that the people in the room are so freaking cool, too, that you just chat about sports and stuff like that. I mean, that's what makes it awesome. and just opening the cards and just dealing with some amazing people.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. And I feel the same way. When I get there on Wednesday and Fridays, I'm like, this isn't working. I'm not working. I get it. I would do this if I made zero money. I would do this. I don't care if I'm opening up like Bowman Hobby and there's one auto per box. I don't care. I'm like, I'll go over the base. I'll sit there and I'll sort base because I like looking at cards. I'm like, I'll do shipping. I'll do whatever. I'll break down cardboard. There's no job too big, no job too small. I just love dealing with cards and just talking cards with people and talking sports and just having a good time. At no point has it ever really been about the money.
Right.
So, and I know like, because the group breaking has blown up and people are like, well, there must be money to be made. Yeah, there wouldn't be a group break pavilion if people were not making money. People get drawn to industries and niches in industries if there's money to be made. But at any point have we actually said, you know what, we're doing this for the money.
Right.
And that's whatever. I mean, it is what it is. You can basically look at us and say, oh, well, that's not the best way to grow your business. I always said if my main objective in an industry is all about money, then it's not going to be fun. I'm not going to have a good time doing it. So that's just the way I roll. Should I have opinions on a group break pavilion? Is it like my turn to talk about it?
Sure.
Or did Ryan just? I do got to say this. David Gelfman, who basically put it on, did a great job. I got to give him an A+ because I know the stress that goes into taking breaks on the road. And we've done it with one booth, just dealing with Doug and I, and maybe a promoter of some sort. But putting on and dealing with however many breakers were in that pavilion, making sure the internet was amazing. I basically thought, you know what, there's not going to be enough bandwidth to basically stream live HD all the time. It's going to go down. Of course, at Panini's booth, when I do a group break, because it's like the mojo curse, man. I destroy internet wherever I go. You may have the best internet connection ever, but, dude, if you get a guy from Silicon Valley walking up with his laptop, and his name's Dan, and he basically plugs into Ethernet, your shit's going down. I'm telling you, I got the mojo kill of the internet every time. So as soon as I plug in, Panini's like, yeah, internet's down. Like, it's completely shot. So I'm like, okay, cool. I sat there, and because I literally have been doing it so long, I'm like, well, this is cool. I'm like, I'm totally expecting this. I'm like, well, let's just go ahead and figure out what we're going to do next. No stress, no nothing. I'm like, we'll figure it out. Even if I got to do the break from the hotel room or do the break when we get home, I'm like, our customers know it's going to happen.
You got to admit, though, you never feel comfortable when you're not at your office, right? Am I right?
Oh, man, and the whole time I'm like, I did the Spectra break, and I, like, look above me, and there's, like, a Ferris wheel, and it's, like, just clinking and clacking the whole time, and I'm like, yeah, I'm like, my customers probably love that. That's great. That's awesome. Like, that's not the experience I want to give to our customers. I want it to be like quiet, clean, just relaxed environment, and cards, and just everybody being relaxed. Not where the camera's like zooming in behind because people are walking behind me, and it's not zooming in on the cards, and there's like people coming up to me asking where they can get their Panini redemptions while I'm doing a break. Probably happened at least 20 times at the Panini booth. Somebody came up to me and asked, like, what kind of replacement I was going to be able to give them for a 2008 football redemption that wasn't live. I mean, I literally was like, I'm pretty sure I'm just going to put a Panini shirt on and just work here for like the next 15, 20 minutes because I was being asked so many questions. And that's another thing what happens when you take the break on the road, especially if you break at, like, a manufacturer's booth.
Yeah, they think you work there.
they think you work there. And you know what? Rightfully so. Like, I get it. If I'm a customer and I see somebody behind a table that has panini all over it, I'm not worried that you're in the middle of, like, doing a live broadcast. I got a redemption I need to fill, and you look like you're a person who works here.
Right. Yeah, so, I don't blame them either.
I get it. I ran around and actually helped about probably 10 or 15 of their customers while I was breaking live. People would come up and I'd be like, okay, well, basically you see that guy over there, go talk to him, or go over there, go talk to him. But it's cool. I mean, I expected it. Getting back to the group, a little tangent there, but getting back to the group break pavilion, nobody wants to buy, I mean, I'm sorry, and I feel this way, and I may be wrong, but nobody is going to go to a card show or an event like that with the mentality that they're like, you know what, I'm going to buy into a group break.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going there, I'm looking for a group break. I'm going to have to find an internet connection somewhere so I can go online and buy it. And then at that point, you're like, it's just not worth it. Like, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to go, instead of buying a group break, I'm going to go to Blowout and buy, like, cards that they're basically, like, boxes of cards that they're selling for $20 below pre-sale price. I'm just going to go over there and buy that box.
You know what would be an amazing thing, and I think we're a few years from doing this, that may actually make the group break pavilion, like, take off, and maybe I'm giving on a good idea here, but we have season tickets for the Niners, and we bought them to go to a few games and make some money on them, so mainly. If they made – Levi Stadium has an amazing app, right? It's pretty fully interactive. You can order food from it, stuff like that. You store your tickets on there. Like, if there was a way for the National to create an app – I know it's only a once-a-year event, so it may not make financial success make financial sense. But maybe when apps, 10 years down the line where you could just make one like a website like you can now, and you can make an app – that people could basically get notifications from group breakers where there's spots available, and then you could pay through your phone and then go pick up your cards later or watch the video later. That would actually make sense because you could be at Blowout's booth and going, okay, I'm going to buy a box of Elite. Oh, boom, Firehands got, or whoever, liveboxbreaks.net or whoever these guys are. I'm just plugging these guys. They've got a free plug. You guys can send me PayPal later. Just kidding. It pops up and it says, spots available, $55 a spot for Spectra. And you go, oh, wow, there's 9 left. Okay. And you just go, boom, check out PayPal on your phone. That's it. And then you got a spot and you could just walk around, and then you could come back. I could see that maybe making some sense where you could announce what break spots you have available.
Yeah, and I gotta say, like, that, so you're like plugging breakers now, and I'm gonna basically add on to that. The relationship between, I would say, majority of the group breakers with each other is like no other industry. We're nice to each other. We sit there, we talk about trade secrets with each other, we talk about how to do things or what works for us. We don't really hide anything. Obviously, we're not giving, like, customers information back and forth, but, like, very, very cool, like, down-to-earth people who run a lot of these companies. They all have their own little niche that works within the group-breaking hobby, but, I mean, you mentioned the guys from Live Box Breaks. Those guys are really, really cool dudes. They do a lot of, like, small, like, not the high-end price point breaks. They do, like, the $5 breaks or $3 breaks, which is a niche that I think a lot of group breakers don't go after. We do a lot of the lower-end products as well, but we do it in, like, cases. The guys from, like, Finest Box Breaks, we've had conversations with those guys, a really, really cool, like, down-to-earth guys who do it the right way. But you turn it around and you look at the distributors in the industry. There's only about 4 or 5 major distributors. And that competition is fierce. And it is, it is, it's fierce. It's dangerous. I mean, it's like, they're clawing and scratching, just trying to get these accounts, and get these accounts exclusive with them. And just, I mean, the way that they're fighting for these guys is almost unheard of. Some distributors are worse than others. Some basically make a lot of their money into gaming. So the sports cards is just kind of like a little added bonus. But the ones who make a lot of money in the sports card game, like, they're going after these group breakers. They're going after each other. I mean, it's like, it's fierce competition. Far more fierce than group breaker to group breaker interaction.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that too much, like, is that too much insight on what's going on?
No, I mean,
should I pump the brakes a little bit and just be like, this is only like talk that we do between us and the industry, or is this
no,
okay to be
common
knowledge?
I don't think we've ever held back on that. I mean, it may not make exciting radio, but I mean, some people that listen to it are interested in that. Most people are probably like, who cares? Who's a distributor? I just want to know about Topps Chrome or something. So, you know, it may not be exciting radio, like I said, but no, I think we've always been transparent with stuff like that. So, you know, no big deal, but I do want to try to,
I like how I asked you after I just said it. Like,
I know, huh? Like, you can take it back.
It's a live show. What are we gonna do? Am I gonna go back and try to edit or something? I don't know. I probably should have asked you before I went on a little tangent.
No, it's all good. But I did want to try to get home to the wife, and but I do want to hit on some more topics here before we go. I wanted to briefly talk about the NFL license thing. The cat's out of the bag. Panini now will have the exclusive NFL license starting 2016, which means no Topps Chrome, no Topps 5-star, Triple Thread, Strata, all that stuff. There'll be no more Topps products unless Panini does buy them out, which could truly be a possibility. So I don't like exclusives. You know, obviously it hurts the end consumer. You know, we said that earlier in the show when we kind of touched on the topic, you know. But at the same time, I don't blame Panini because, you know, any industry where you can take out your competition, you'd be dumb not to. And you know, from what I've heard out there, it didn't really take a whole lot of money for them to do it. So it really kind of shows you that Topps money isn't there. I believe you and Brian talked about that on his show, or on Colin's show. So I kind of took that from you guys, but yeah. So I mean, it's not a great thing, but I think I'm trying to find the silver lining here. I mean, obviously Panini threw an awesome party, and there's some signs of some better products to come. Obviously, Hot Rookies was a dump. I think Elite was great. I think Prime Hockey was great. They do have some. They do have the ability to make a good and demanding product. They have the ability to do that. It's just they also do put some real stinkers out there. So I think us as a collecting community, and maybe I should aim this more at group breakers. Come 2016, if these products aren't selling, we need to stop buying it. Like, that's the only way they're going to change. So if they come out and they're like, we have the exclusive, we don't care. We're going to basically poop in a pack and put it out, and you're going to have to buy it. It doesn't matter because it's NFL license, and it doesn't matter what we put out. And we're going to make 1 million boxes of Score Hot Rookies, and there's not going to be any great autos in it except for 1 in a million boxes and stuff. If they do that, you need to stop them short and stop buying it. That's what we need to do. And like right now, they make bad products, but we still buy it. That's the issue, is that we're still buying the products. So they don't realize it's bad because they're just looking at sales figures. I mean, they realize some of it's bad because they have to run the Black Fridays and the NSCC promos and stuff like that, which Topps doesn't do. Topps doesn't really do anything in that regard. So, yes, you can say they don't need to sell their products, but don't they need to give something back to their customers? So there's kind of a give and take there. And I also think that really what's going to be – you may think that Panini sucks. You know, some of you guys out there may think Panini sucks, but if somebody's willing to pay $200 for a rookie auto of somebody, then the product's going to do okay. It's when when one of these first round guys in 2016, like the Johnny Manziel of 2016, whoever that's going to be, when his auto comes out and it sells for $40, then we're going to have a problem. Because nobody's going to be willing to spend $150 on a box when the best card you can get is $40 and there's no chase cards. So that's what needs to be in these products going forward in 2016. They need to create a chase element. And they need to, you know, keep the collecting community entertained, get them coming back, and they need to make a quality product. Their customer service is there. What they do, well, I've heard some stories, but their customer service is better than Tops. You know, they seem to do a lot of freebies and stuff like that, so their promotions are great. I mean, they do stuff on Twitter and stuff like that. It's just the products need to sell on eBay. That's the bottom line. And go ahead. I've been rambling.
No, I mean, okay, so let's face it. Products, for the most part, are at the mercy of the rookie classes. If it's a good rookie class, you can pretty much put out whatever product. People are going to be into it. They're intrigued by the rookies that are coming out. There's value there. If it's a crappy rookie class, the products are not going to do well. So these manufacturers are, to some degree, at the mercy of the rookie classes because all the products that come out are all rookie-based for the most part. Panini. I mean, I had a 20-minute conversation with Tracy at Panini. They never had the intention of trying to put out a crappy product. They don't sit there and draw it up and go, hey, how can we just make a crappy product this time? Their intentions are to make a good, valuable product. Does it happen all the time? No, it doesn't happen all the time. Topps is the same way. I mean, Topps doesn't – everything that Topps comes out with isn't gold. They make crappy products too. But, I mean, Panini will admit that they had products that came out, especially basketball products that came out, that were not good, that performed poorly, that were not what they expected. I don't know who goes into – somebody needs to go in there and basically get a pulse on what the collector wants. And then at that point, you make that product. And if that means making less of it, and if that means upping the price a little bit.
Yep, I was going to say that.
They can still come out with 22 football products or whatever the number is, but you make less, and you make them different. You make the products different, and you make it for different types of collectors. You don't just put out the same type of thing for the same type of collector. Like, you don't put out 6 or 8 mid-level products that nobody could really tell you the difference between Hot Rookies, Elite, and Prestige. Nobody can tell you the difference. It's all directed towards the same market. You got to come up with designs that get people interested. Like, you make something that's solely legend. Like, you know, you may only have one auto a box. But even the base cards are old legend players. Something like that. I know, like, Upper Deck has done stuff like that in the past. But you need to be different. You can't just put the same rookies in, like, eight boxes, and that's the set every time.
You know what? I hate when people copy people, so I'm going to kind of be a hypocrite here. But if this is anything, signs to come. From the VIP Gold Packs, there was a superfractor design, and it is literally a superfractor from top down to the T. So Leaf, and let me say this first, Leaf does the superfractor as well. Leaf copied it too. So I think that was kind of a smart move for them to see what these cards are going to sell for on eBay. Like, if it's going to sell more because it's a superfractor design, I think in this instance, copying the superfractor design is a smart move because collectors like that look. So what we'll have to see what the market does with this superfractor, being it's a Panini superfractor now, not a top superfractor, and see what that superfractor does. Like I said, I hate copying, but I think the superfractor is such an iconic design. When you see it coming out of a pack, you know it's something. And even with Leaf, I saw a superfractor come, I got excited. So I think that collectors have been trained to expect the superfractor. So we'll see how Panini implements the superfractor, if this was just a test run. Search it on eBay. You can find them. Type in VIP Gold Pack superfractor.
what's the legality with, like, trademarks on card designs?
I don't think you can. That might be a good question for Ryan.
I think as long as they don't call it a superfractor, they can probably get away with it. But if they call it a superfractor.
No, Leaf calls it a superfractor. I don't think you could patent a term of describing a card.
Because
unless Topps had a set called Topps Superfractors, then they could have a patent on it. But they never had a set called that. So I don't know. I'm an idiot just spouting off here, but
that's coming out.
Probably the last football product.
It's gonna be $15,000 a box. It's gonna have one superfractor.
There you go. What do you think about that? Right? I mean, can you patent superfractors? And what are your thoughts on Panini using the superfractor design?
You know what? I think a lot of times they go through the same printing. All this stuff is printed at a third-party location with some sort of graphics and printing company. So they might even be going through a similar vendor, or like one vendor has the same technology as the other vendor. You know what I'm saying? I'd actually be interested to learn a little bit more about that myself and start to research that a little bit more, because if you knew about these printing companies, you would know about the designs before they even happened, because they would pimp out these designs at like a trade show or something. So I don't know, it's all third party, so it's not like Topps owns the superfractor technology. I don't think. They may have licensed it, like they have an exclusive license with this printer to use it, but Topps doesn't, quote, own it, you know, so.
Huh. Yeah, and before we move on to do some quick reviews on Platinum and Prime, I wanted to get your take I already know where you stand, but I wanted to get your take, Ryan, on the exclusive with Panini.
I mean, it's devastating, and you know, we're not done. This is just literally the first domino to fall. So now we're going to see, okay, well, what's going to happen to Predictor Tops? One of them is going to get bought by Panini. I would bet any amount of money on that. Or they'll go broke, and that could happen to either one of them. And it doesn't mean – when I say a company goes broke, that doesn't mean they disappear. GM went broke, and they're still making cars.
Right.
A lot of times it's just to get rid of some of that old debt, and you come back as a new company. Maybe Panini can buy the brands – the sports cards brands that Topps has and license them. And so then Topps can just sit back and collect a check and earn money off their name. So Panini buys, they license from Topps to be able to use the name Topps Chrome, use the name, you know what I mean? And Topps doesn't even make the cards. They just get a check for it. They just get a check from Panini for it. I could see a possibility where Leaf is in actually the worst position, because he's the smallest and he's going to get swallowed up. Panini doesn't want any of these pre-draft sets to come out. Sage, Crest Pass, Upper Deck, you know, Leaf Metal Draft. Panini doesn't want all that stuff to come out the same way they want it to happen in basketball. Why don't you see it in basketball? You don't think so? A pre-draft set with Wiggins and Randall and Marcus Smart and all these guys would have been pretty hot, and Embiid and Jabari Parker, somebody would have made it, but no, Panini locked the top 10 picks all up to an exclusive before the draft even happened.
Right.
So Panini's going to, and people don't even realize this, they're going to try to wipe out everybody. Look at the heading in their company bio, the number one collectibles company. They don't want anybody else doing this. I don't care what anybody says, and don't listen to these dumb employees on Twitter and these lower-level employees, they don't know crap, nothing, period. They're just little employees who just kind of speak the company line half the time. I had to break to them that the damn NFL exclusive happened. And trust me, I was looking at these guys in their face, be like, swear to me, I'm the one who told you that this was going to happen.
a couple of them swore to me that I was literally the first guy to tell them about the exclusive. Now, yeah, they knew that the negotiations had been going on really, frankly, since January, February, but I was the first guy to tell them because everybody wanted to keep it quiet. And it sounded like it kind of first got out because Topps was told first that they weren't going to get it. And I'm sure then Topps went and started running their mouth to distributors and some other people. So at the end of the day, this is horrible. This is just the first domino. Panini's not going to stop at an NFL fight. Try to kick out Leaf, kick out Sage, kick out Press Pass, potentially buy Topps or Upper Deck or both. I mean, what's to $200 million to get the NFL license? That might buy Topps and Upper Deck. I'm sure
right.
people at Upper Deck and Topps will be like, oh, no, we're worth way more than that and da-da-da-da-da. That, not really, guys. Maybe the digital, you know, if you just separated out the sports card business of Upper Deck and Topps, it's probably not worth $200 million combined for both companies. Yeah, they have some other stuff, some entertainment stuff, some Topps has an unbelievable app.
Ring Pops.
Ring Pop, right, Bazooka Joke. But the top, actually, the best thing the Topps has going for them is the Topps Bunt app. I can't tell you, I met three or four people that were like, yeah, I draw over five figures on that app. And I'm not saying they're making money on that app. I'm not saying they're making money on that app at all right now because that app was probably cost them multiple millions upon millions of dollars. You could also look up a public company called Zynga. They make some of the like Words with Friends. I mean, they make all the popular games everybody plays, Angry Birds. A lot of times those little gaming companies, they don't make crap. They don't the guys who made, you know, maybe the original developer, but a lot of these gaming companies, they're really struggling, these little casual phone games, because we're just not there yet. This is a totally new thing. This is kind of like group breaking. We're in this, you know, brand new window, smartphones, you know, where, you know, we're in this whole new world of things. So, you know, I would just, you know, it's interesting. It sucks. At the end of the day, the NFL sucks. So, bottom line, and we're not even close to being done. These next 2 years, for me, are probably going to be two of the most interesting years that I'll ever witness in sports cards, but that's only because I'm interested in the business of it.
Right.
It's actually going to end up, I think it's going to end up really bad. And I think it's going to be Panini because they have these soccer stickers, which I'm sure before this World Cup happened, everybody underestimated the fact that how much money they made on this stuff and that it's literally just like a golden goose that pays out every 4 years. The same way when Take-Two Interactive comes out with Grand Theft Auto every 2 or 3, 4 years, boom, that's an instant $1 billion to the balance sheet. That's what keeps their stock propped up in years that Grand Theft Auto doesn't come out, or that they struggle in some of the other videos they make. Because guess what? Every 4 years, you just turn the light switch on and you release Grand Theft Auto and it sells a billion games. So Panini has this opportunity, has this ability that every 4 years when the world's biggest sporting event happens, they're making one of the coolest collectibles you can buy and one of the most popular things you can buy. And they're easy to make and they're cheap and you don't have to go get Ronaldo's autograph and you don't have to get a piece of Ronaldo's jersey. No, you just pay FIFA probably a crap ton of money and you get Ronaldo's picture and you put it on a card like it's a 1990 Topps card. And we're talking about the easiest money in the world. So it's really scary. This is going to change a lot. And it's going to change a lot, and I see it kind of ending up the Italian way. It's going to be panini bread and wine and cheese. That's about all you're going to get. So, Doug, you made a very good point that group breakers, if it's 75% of the people at this VIP event, you're right. If you guys really want to make a statement and you guys are all kind of friendly with each other and things start getting a little bad, I wouldn't do it right now, but if things start getting bad, yes, I would all get on a conference call together or kind of the four or five main guys, get on a conference call, all say, you know what, we're not going to order Panini's 2016 Panini Hot Rod piece. No, we're literally not going to order it. That honestly would put attention to those guys because probably each of you guys could run through, I don't know, 4 or 5, who knows how many cases each. We're talking about probably 20, 30, 40, 50 cases of product.
Right.
And you guys could really have the balls. What if you didn't buy a good product?
Right.
What if you guys were so fed up that you were like, we're not going to buy National Treasures. We don't care. We're done. We're done. You just quit, start making better cards, or stop only coming out with one product, or stop making us buy all this promotional crap. Or when Black Friday comes, don't buy the packs. Don't buy into the incentivized packs. That's not an option for right now, but certainly you're right. That is a power play that you guys could pull if need be, and stick Panini and frankly stick the distributors with all this product. Because what are they going to do? They've now got to come begging back to you. We'll do this for you. You'll see them stammer like you'd never believe. Like they couldn't even get the words out of their mouth. It's five of their biggest group breakers who have huge accounts with these distributors that we're not going to buy 2016 hot rookies. How do you like
right.
that?
Right.
You know, so that's definitely an option. If you guys do, remain friendly with people.
The only issue with that, though, and I mean, if you do that, you're opening up the door for Joe Blow group breaker to basically come in and say, well, I'm going to go ahead and do hot rookies because nobody else is doing it.
Right.
And then another guy starts doing the same thing because he sees him sell out his breaks. Then another guy does the same thing. So then you have, like, a bunch of the other guys who are basically pulling up the slack of the other guys who refuse to buy it.
Right.
So
well,
that,
then
that's
then
just
you, some, this is what you do. Then you check me and you say, you know what, it's like a group breaker association, you know, it's like a homeowners association. The group breakers association agrees you're not going to buy 2016 hot rookie. And yes, I could definitely see how there's going to be some little outsider who's going to be like, ooh, this is my opportunity. I'm going to do hot rookies break. That's when you text me and tell me this is the breaker that's doing it. And trust me, I'll be on there blasting this guy. Saying he's going against the code. He's like a scab. He's like crossing the picket line. Like, you know, what are you doing? You know, you like throw stones at those guys. You know what I mean? You that's when you just text me and I can handle this situation because I think that is the only option I see to where some of the control, some of the leverage can return to the group breaker or return to the dealer in general. I actually think group breakers are going to become more dealers. That it's not just going to be selling spots. It might be selling packs. It might be selling virtual packs. It might be selling single cards. It might be doing a whole different number of things. So I think that'll actually evolve to where group breakers are actually selling more. People will be buying maybe potentially their supplies from them or something totally that we're not even thinking about or a way to sell this stuff without even thinking about or a way to buy packs without even having to worry about paying pack search or something really innovative to where you are hitting that lower price point. You mentioned those group breakers who are doing a lower price point breaks. I actually think that's a fantastic idea to hit that lower price point. Not everything's $100, you know, $75. It's $5, $10. Hey, get it. Maybe you can buy by the pack.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you buy by the pack and you have to build it up a little bit. You have to build it up before it gets shipped to you. It can be kind of a pain to buy a pack and ship it to a guy. That can cost a lot, but you can make, instead of a, hey, guy, you know, And you want the products to release. So, hey, you get a pack of every single football product for X amount of dollars. You know what I mean? And you can wait until the very end or open three or four packs for them and then send them out and wait for another four or five products. I think it could be a really innovative thing that it's not just sitting on the webcam begging for a spot. I think it could be a whole virtual card store, you know, where they're buying all any numbers of things. So, but... But it's going to get very difficult with Panini getting exclusive. So, you know, the next couple of years are going to be really interesting to watch and see what happens.
I think what we're going to see, I think we're going to close it up here. But what I think we're going to see, and I think we've already seen, is I think certain companies might actually look to the group breakers and be like, hey, what do your customers look for? Try to get more of a pulse on how to design cards and what they should put in there. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. They're like, well, you guys open up more stuff than anybody else. You guys basically know what your customers are looking for. I think group breakers are going to have a little bit more say in how these products are packed out, produced, content, stuff like that.
Well, and that's actually kind of already in the works. I've kind of mentioned it to a couple of guys from Panini, and they're – you know, I know they have other priorities, but I'm trying to set up some kind of conference call with some of their sales guys and their designers, mainly the guys that are designing these products and stuff like that, is to get them to have some kind of conference call with some of the bigger guys that open a lot of product and say, hey, this worked, this didn't work. So, you know, we're coming out with another product in 8 months or whatever. What do you think you need to make this product successful? That's what needs to happen. So, but I did want to touch on before we go, I wanted to touch on the two releases last week, which I thought both of them were decent. I actually really liked Prime Hockey a lot. And, obviously it's their second to last hockey release. So they amped it up. I mean, last year it was good anyway, but they amped it up even more. I mean, there's just insane patches. Every box has just a beautiful car. I mean, it's what a perfect product should be. I mean, it's a mixture of everything. And hockey is one of those sports that allows you to put in these kind of, like, amazing sweater patches and Reebok themes and pieces of the stick, pieces of the skate, pieces of the hats that they wore on the draft day. There's so much in the spectrum of hockey that you can use for memorabilia cards, and they really kind of showcased it with Prime Hockey. So even this is one of those, you know, a lot of products that they've came out with, I would say, you know, you need to be a hockey collector to get into a group break or to buy a box. This is one of those products that if you've never collected hockey, yes, it's like a $200 retail product, but this is a product that if you want to dip your toes in the water, this is a perfect product too, because you're going to get some collectible cards. You're going to get some low-numbered patches. You're going to get some prime patch autos. I think they did a really good job. I mean, they're kind of going out with a bang, and I think National Treasures hockey is going to be even better. So really, if you're on the edge about ever buying into a hockey break or buying a box, I think this is the time with Prime Hockey. They absolutely killed it. Old veterans, all the good rookies from the double class. I think they did really well. Platinum, I don't know. You know, Platinum, I didn't really get any amazing stuff out of four cases. I mean, I hit two Chris Bryant 2013 Bowman draft autos, which are, you know, like $400 to $500 cards. So those were nice. But I just didn't get the wow factor from Platinum. The design is amazing. I love the on-card autos. They have patch autos that are stickers. Very, very few redemptions, which is good. Very few redemptions. But I don't know. The wow factor wasn't exactly there for me. Now, can you hit some big names? Yes, Chris Bryant, Abreu, Tavares, Buxton, all those guys are in there. Trout's in there. So there's some big names in there, and you could definitely do well on a box of it. I don't know. I just didn't see the boom ability for me. But it maybe I just got some cases that I didn't really kill it with. So, but I think it's still a good prospecting set. It's a good kind of middle of the road at like $100 a box to get three autos, and you can get lots of color. There's a lot more green refractors this year, so semi decent set. So, you know, that's pretty much that.
Let me ask you something about Platinum though, because I think this is what maybe the fourth year that they've released Platinum Baseball?
I believe so. I think it came out in 2010, yeah.
So if Platinum Baseball went away, do you think anybody would realize it, care? What really separates Platinum Baseball from Finest Baseball or any of the other, like, on-card auto products that they come out with, Bowman Chrome? I mean, what really... I mean, at least Finest has a name, and it's been around for, I think, close to 20 years now. But if Platinum went away, you think anybody would care, notice?
I mean, there's some hardcore prospectors that would care, but, I mean, yeah, it's probably one of those items that are on the list, the last list. I think Inception's kind of bumped it off now. I think Inception's kind of passed it up. It's the one of the only few. I think there's only two. Actually, it is the only prospect product that has patch autos, so that's its stigma. Because Finest is more of a rookie auto patch. So
that's
it is
true. But you have Sterling as well, which I have always felt is a far better value than almost any baseball product that comes out. At least any baseball rookie and prospect set that comes out.
I take that back about the patch autos, because Inception has patch autos too. But I think Sterling is a far superior product too. So I don't know. Platinum kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
What do you think, Ryan? Think people would miss Platinum?
No, I mean probably not. If they just stop making it, I think Doug, you made a good point. I think Inception has passed it by. So whereas a couple of years ago, yeah, maybe you said if they cut Platinum out, you're like, oh no, I kind of liked it. But whereas now you're doing Inception, those are better looking cards. I think it's configured better. It's just hits right out of Inception. I mean, you get like five or six autographs or something. So it's easier to open. It's easier for you guys to open. It's giving people what they want. They don't want a freaking another Carlos Correa base card with 5-10 parallels. They'll take another autograph. They'll take another Jorge Soler autograph. They'll take Buxton or one of the new guys, that doesn't have a card yet. But they usually say that for – but I would like to see them make Bowman a little more organized so that you kind of, I don't know, knew – not necessarily know who's going to be on the set, but can kind of predict it a little better. I don't think people would miss it. Now, it's maybe not a loser for them, so that's maybe why they keep putting it out, because it's just good enough to make some money on. And, you know, and some of those autographs are very affordable. They're a lot less expensive than the regular Bowman or Bowman Chrome or Bowman Draft one, so it does hit a little bit of a lower price point if you're looking to pick up a Joey Gallo or a Miguel Sano or, any one of these guys. You know, you're paying less than you will out of the other one. So, which does, maybe it dilutes it a little bit, but at the same time, I'm a sucker for these prospect cards too. So, those are some of the few sets that I'm actually interested in is, hey, what prospects do they have in there? You know, what do the cards look like? What are the cards selling for? I'm buying prospect cards all the time and keeping them until they get called up, until the guys get called up or do something really big. I don't know if they would miss it, but I don't know if it's that big a loop. You know, it's not like hot rookies where you're like, yeah, stop making hot rookies. It might just be one of those products where it's, you know, just good enough to kind of still make it, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we've went through this before, and I know Doug's like trying to go now. I don't have this even on the itinerary. But what do you think? Like Topps Baseball, if they were to say next year cut a product, what do you think it would be?
Archives.
It's funny because you said archives. The first product I think of is archives. Because it performed so poorly the last couple of years. But the funny thing is that we say archives, but it's one of the few products they make that's different.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that's tricky, because it's like, well, this is the few things that they actually make where it's different guys that they're not pumping out in every product.
Right.
But it performs so poorly that you got to say archives. What do you think, Ryan?
Gypsy Queen, maybe. You know, this
Yeah.
The thing about archives is that the box price actually went up on that one because, one, it was limited and people were going nuts over those major league autographs. It's a horrible group break. Like, it's a disgusting group break product. But there are a few people, and this was the only year where I personally think it was any good. I think the last few years have really been dogs, that the price even tanked a little bit at the wholesale level. So, and it's never been a good group breaking product. So, but if I were to pick one, I think Gypsy Queen. There's just you have I don't know. I just don't see a point for it because you have Alan Ginter, and Gypsy Queen is just not really the same thing. It's just not as good. Whereas Ginter can be kind of interesting and unique and kind of quirky. I would just focus on that set and put all my resources.
But
you also look at
Heritage as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Heritage, Gypsy Queen, Archives. I think it's safe to say that one of those three will not be around next year.
Yeah, we'll definitely see.
But we'll see. Sweet.
All right. Well, we'll continue that conversation on the next time that we're on. Or we'll have to fast forward till next year. So, but I think that's it for today's show. We got some breaks of Inception tomorrow, football, which always is a pretty fun rip, so that should be pretty cool. Make sure you follow Ryan at Sports Card News on Twitter, And check out mojobreak.com. We are out for the week. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thank you guys for listening. Always appreciate it. Thanks to you guys that came up to the National and said you listened to the show. And now we actually know people listen to this thing. So thank you guys again. And we'll see you guys hopefully next week, if not the week after. So we're out. Peace.
Later. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.